Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook VIP podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Oh, what do we have? Another episode with my father, one of my favorite ways to podcast. How's it going, man? Good to have you on the line.
It's going great, Jordan. Great to be here. Hello, everybody.
It's one of my favorite things to see when I sit down for my day and see which podcast I'm doing is these listener questions. It's always great to talk to you and to riff like we do every time we see each other, really. But the listener questions are just always so stimulating and fun. So I'm excited to get into that. But first, I wanted to talk to you about a thought that I had about the quality of life category.
This
is a huge category for me. I just like the idea of in the Lifebook program when you walk us through what is your ideal day look like. I think that's, to me, that's kind of what it all adds up to. A lot of people are concerned with accomplishment and achieving great things, and I am too. But when you do that part of the program, I feel so deeply connected with that's what I care about is how I spend my days. Do you find that exercise to be really powerful for a lot of people?
Yeah, man, that's where the rubber hits the road. That's it's about our existence on this planet, and it's not just about charging towards your goals every second of the day. Life is meant to be enjoyed. Life is meant to be lived. And I mean, goal accomplishment is an important part. It's an important part of self-esteem, how you feel about yourself. It's an important funder for your overall quality of life. It's super important, but it's certainly not the only thing. The real measure in my mind, Jordan, is happiness. That's the real measure. Aristotle said happiness is the meaning and purpose of life, the whole aim and end of human existence. I've used that quote so many times because it just really sums it up, you know, and what you just really have to make sure that the hours of your days are being spent in ways that make you happy, satisfied, fulfilled, joyful, right? That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've spoken on it before, but when I'm thinking about how I want to spend my days and how the average person might answer that question and design their ideal day, does creativity live in this category? You've famously said that you think you missed the category of creativity, and that because you're an artist, you couldn't see the forest through the trees. Does creativity live in the quality of life category?
You're giving away my secret, my dirty little secret that I may have missed a category here. Yeah, you know, and it's because creativity plays such a huge role in my life. It's right. I mean, it's in everything that I do.
It's like, duh.
And right.
Not so, the case for everybody.
But here's what I'd say. You can bring creativity to every single area of your life, and you need to.
That's true.
It's an incredibly important thing. Think about bringing creativity to your love relationship. Those little wonderful creative surprises that can just light up somebody's day, creative dates, creative trips. Creativity in that one category alone can change your life. Same thing with health and fitness. You don't have to do the same thing everybody else does. Go to the gym 45 minutes, you know, 4 days a week. You can make up your own thing that really, really works for you. So, Jordan, I don't think that creativity necessarily belongs in any one specific category. I think it's more a personality trait that you can bring to every important area of your life to enhance your experience. And in the quality of life category, you know, you want to bring creativity to your environment. You want to make it as beautiful and inspiring as you possibly can. We'll talk about that on this podcast. You want to bring creativity to your experiences, you know, and really do some out-of-the-box stuff that most people wouldn't think about. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I'm not sure whether or not this should be its own standalone category, but I'll tell you what, would be a really good idea for me to make a little module discussing, because I mean, obviously, creativity is my life. It's what our family does.
Yeah. I bet if you spent some time writing a module and trying to you know, extract some really positive principles and values, I bet you would come up with a badass one on creativity.
Well, I think I'm going to next year. I think I need to do that. I've been thinking about this for a couple years now, and it's come up more and more. So and every time I do something like this, go into a deep exploration like that, I get so much out of it. And so I think I may put that on the list for next year.
That's great. Well, one other thought that I wanted to explore before we get into the questions here. Quality of life So a lot of life bookers are concerned. I would say most life bookers are concerned with obviously living an extraordinary life. But most of the time that goes along with, let's say, adventure and you know, like achieving a lot, like I said. But I feel like it's for the adventurous, and there's the homebodies, right? There's the creature comfort people who sometimes don't shine in every life book category, but the quality of life is where the creature comforts live. And I realized as a human being, maybe it's part of my OCD, I derive an insane amount of satisfaction from creature comforts.
Yeah, man. Well, it's your personality, Jordan. You're a generator on the human design system. You're a five on the Enneagram scale. You are somebody who really, really likes to be comfortable, and you're willing to sacrifice some of those adrenaline-oriented adventure moments for more comfort and more tranquility. You've always been that way. It's just, you know, we're all different. And like I'm an eight with a seven wing on the Enneagram scale, so I'm a driver with an adventurer wing. I'm willing to sacrifice creature comfort sometimes for that intense adrenaline-oriented adventure. I like that.
Precisely, you know, yeah.
I don't like being necessarily in revolutions in Egypt. that stuff comes with the territory sometimes. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally.
Listen, I love. So it's up to each one of us to really decide where our satisfaction lies, where our happiness lies.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, a perfect word,
and
too.
And then move toward that. Whatever it is.
Yeah, there's something satisfying about knowing I have the best of this thing. And what a blessed time we live in where
you can
be like, oh, I only eat the imported Italian salami. Like that's there's really something that you derive a lot of pleasure from. And it was interesting speaking with Marissa Peer, and she would say, she was talking about gratitude actually and just being happy in general. And she said, you know, I'll do my accent, but when you get in the shower and you have your shower gel and you smell your leave-in. Oh, you love it. And you just love it. And it's like, it's so true. You can, if you choose,
totally.
You can derive that deep satisfaction from something as simple as a shower gel.
You know what it is for Missy and I, you know, one of those little things for Missy and I, it's massage oil. So our favorite massage oil, one came from a spa in southern Thailand that we can't find anymore. But the other brand that we absolutely love is only sold in the airport in Qatar in the Middle East, right? But here's the thing. We're flying through Qatar to Kuala Lumpur next week, and we can't friggin' wait because we've been out of our massage oil for months, and we're going to pick it up in that airport. And it's just one of those things, just like shower gel, the you know, Creed soaps, or we talk about this in some of the quality of life shows that we've done in the past, those little tiny things that just make you feel so good. I love that.
Yeah, it's a big leverage, so.
Yep.
Well, I'm looking at these awesome questions, and I figure we should probably jump in. You ready?
Let's do it, yep.
First one comes from Nick. Since recording the program, do you have any extra or new tips for creating a tranquil environment?
Tranquil environment. Well, I'm not sure that I have any new tips, but I'll reframe it in a different way. For tranquility in your environment, any time that you can integrate nature, any kind of nature,
mm-hmm.
running water, we've talked about that, having plants around you, growing living things, views, just a beautiful view out of a window, you know, anytime you can integrate nature, that's the key. Also, fire is awesome. Fire, I don't know, it does something deep, deep, deep to us as human beings. It's super, super connected to, you know, just to our history. Candles, fireplaces, plus it makes you look friggin' beautiful. And then music is another trick that we should all be using. Either music or, you know, there's some really wonderful tracks on YouTube, 10-hour long, beautiful environmental tracks now with Tibetan bells and nature sounds, and there's just so many good resources out there. But I would say that overall, anytime you can integrate nature into your environment in any way, shape, or form, you're going to just automatically tip toward tranquility.
Mm-hmm. And look into some cool stuff like crystal bowls that they use for sound baths. And
yep.
There's a lot of stuff that we've been doing at Lifebook that involves stuff like that. And it's just really effective.
Yeah. You know, you might make a beautiful little meditation spot.
A shrine.
Yeah, exactly.
A shrine.
Miss and I have really enjoyed incense lately. That's something that we didn't used to do. We used to have aromatherapy in our house through our air conditioning system. And now we're more into, just beautiful incense from India and stuff like that. That really, smell is another scent that you want to really bring in. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I would say is that if you pay attention to the five senses, that's how you bring an environment alive. In one room, like your bedroom, for instance, if you want to build the value of sensuality into your bedroom, you use sight, smell, sound, touch, and taste. You make sure that it's a beautiful, beautiful environment. There's a lot of different ways to do that. That's where you bring in the fire and the candles, etc. You handle the sound through beautiful music or waterfalls. Touch is the textures and materials you're using. And so thinking about the five senses, that's what you're really trying to turn on. Mm-hmm. In each of these little environmental spaces.
I like that.
That's another nice angle to think about this from.
Good luck, Nick. Next question from Jeff and Lisa. And I can weigh in on this one. This is a very pertinent question in my world. They ask, my husband and I are wondering what your advice is for creating your dream home while also sharing it with a 5-year-old boy. Our desire for a calm, serene, clean, and organized home appears to be in direct conflict with his desires to spread his trucks, Legos, and action figures all over our small house. We have some structures in place, such as he has to put all of his toys away every night before bed, but we definitely feel the effects of the chaos and the clutter more than we'd like. So you can weigh in. You can weigh in first, and then I'll try to share what little knowledge I've gleaned.
Well, it's a great question. So here is my number one recommendation: an inner sanctum for you, and an inner sanctum for the little guy. So Jeff and Lisa, here's what I would do: I'd make my bedroom the inner sanctum. He's not allowed in there. Literally, not allowed in there. That's the place where you can put the. You know, the beautiful things the little boys break if they climb all over everything. I would make that our sacred space, and that gives you the feeling of being
human,
of having that container.
Yeah,
exactly. Right, and then I'd make a little inner sanctum for him where he doesn't have to pick up his toys. And
that's a good idea.
I would make that a closet. I would literally find a closet, and I would trick it out. Put a little video game console in there. We did this every single stage of your life, Jordan. You had one of these.
You're right. You
golf ranch. You have your golf ranch and your cat rooftop hole. Your little fort.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. You're never too privileged to enjoy an empty closet with the shelves taken out. And
absolutely,
you stick your little toy swords and your stuffed animals in there. No, that's a good point.
I grew up poor, and I grew up in a horrendously disordered, chaotic, just awful household from the standpoint of environment. It was always filthy. My mom had six babies in 7 years and 2 months. She completely lost control with, at baby number four. And it was a disaster of an environment. And always, from the time I was probably in fifth grade, I always had a little closet somewhere, or the first one was down in our basement. I had to climb through all the chaos and craziness, but there was a back hallway in our musty old basement that I turned into my little temple, and no one was allowed in there. And I had everything ordered and neat and clean, and I had my posters on the wall, and I had my records, and I had, you're right. And then that eventually ended up going to the attic. And I'd have my little place up there. I've always needed my ordered safe place to retreat to from the chaos of the outer world. And when Miss and I built our dream home that we've been living in for the last 22 years, that was the concept of it. We're going to create an oasis, a tranquil environment that will protect us from the chaos of the world around us. So it started out with a 4x4 foot closet, and it ended up being a 17,000 square foot mansion outside the city of Chicago.
That's wild.
But the concept is exactly the same. You've got to have a place that you can go to to retreat and to feel good and to know that you need those boundaries around you,
mm-hmm.
or at least I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest that an inner sanctum for you where the little boy's not allowed to go, and an inner sanctum for him where he owns that little space and he can do whatever he wants with it. And then all the rest is neutral. Everything else is crossover. But I think you need those two sacred spaces.
I like that, man.
It's
similar to what I was going to suggest, which is segregation. So they mentioned they have a small house, which doesn't help. But I have a little 3-bedroom townhome. It is 3 bedrooms, but it's not large. And we simply dedicated one of those bedrooms. It acts as the guest room, but it is also our love spot, our hangout spot. No toys in there. Completely shut off. There is no signs of the baby aside from the monitor all the way over in the corner so we can keep an eye on her. That is our sanctuary, as you said. So I think as long as you keep that out, if he's got trucks and Legos and action figures all over, take a look at those toys and maybe ask yourself if he has too many. Take a trip down to Goodwill. If there's too many toys, maybe teach him the value of giving. Give some of those to less fortunate kids. You know?
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. It's crazy how much shit we buy for our kids. And it's plastic crap that needs to be thrown away three or four. And so, yeah, purging constantly is a very good idea. Let me share one more thing. And no, everybody can't do this, but this was an amazing thing for Missy and me. For 18 years, we had a place in the city that was our date place. In addition to our house in the country. So we raised you kids out here in the country in this beautiful free nature environment, and then Miss and I would go into the city every week. You don't need to rent or buy your own place. You can do hotels, you can do Airbnbs.
Mm-hmm.
But we got away. We left and retreated to a beautiful it's basically a sex pad where we could have our grown-up time. And that's really been our number one love relationship strategy.
That's a good point, because it makes the toys and the Legos and it makes that more bearable, makes it less offensive
when you know
just come
that
back
you're gonna. You're gonna go to have your grown up time and really connect, and then you come back and you're right. You got filled up. You got your
dose.
You had the connection you needed.
Yeah, totally love it.
Yep.
Next question from Adit. How do you balance this quality of life category with environmental responsibility? What are your thoughts on ecological footprint of excess? That's really fascinating.
Well, I think that environmental responsibility and footprint of excess is a very, very deep issue that most people don't understand very well.
Right.
Most people associate environmental damage with capitalism, and there is some of that, there's no question, but the opposite is also true. Clearly, progress and prosperity tend to support the environment, though not always. Not always. It's the poorest countries that are the biggest perpetrators of environmental damage. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
If Brazil was, a solid first world country, they would not be cutting down their rainforest right now.
Right.
It's as simple as that. I mean, we've been to 100 countries. We've seen how this works, and most people just really don't get it. Miss and I believe in conscious capitalism. Every single one of our companies is focused on doing good in the world and to the world. We believe in doing our personal part to protect this earth that's given us life. But we don't tend to just automatically disparage capitalism and the corporations that create the products and services that not only make our lives better and safer and easier and more enjoyable, but make it so that we don't have to, so that we can move in the right direction. Tesla is moving in the right direction from Ford, right? The only reason that we can do that now is because some people can afford $150,000 cars that you plug into a wall. Prosperity is what created that. The only way we're going to get off of fossil fuels is with technological breakthroughs, and that's called conscious capitalism. So I think the number one thing is we all need to do our personal part. I believe in doing my personal part as opposed to pointing fingers at other people.
I think that's what she's focusing on is consumption. No, that's kind of the vibe I'm getting. But
well, consumption is a necessary part of life. You cannot live without consuming.
Right.
Right. So what needs to happen is we need to bring consciousness and a balance to it. And here's the other thing, Jordan. You're a student of history like I am. we have to figure out a way to heal our past and to forgive ourselves and others for what it took to get us here.
Exactly.
It was not pretty.
Yeah.
It was not pretty.
Yeah.
99.999% of all species that ever grew on this planet are extinct. We made it through, and we almost didn't. We almost didn't a few times. A
couple times, yeah.
Yeah, but we did. We made it through, and it wasn't pretty. And we're to the place now where we really have a chance to surge into the next phase of our existence as a species and really create a sustainable world.
Right. Here's
that
the thing.
Nurtures all of us.
Here's the thing. What is excess? We've been in excess for a long time. You don't need an automobile. You don't need healthcare. You don't need, I mean, there is so much excess that we've been into for a long time.
Excess is a subjective, judgmental word that is associated with a surplus. And a surplus is incredibly important because only with a surplus can you help the people around you.
That's true.
If you have only enough to survive, you can't do shit for anybody else.
But yeah, if you take the average surplus, let's say, throughout human history, right now we are so far off the scales. I think it's kind of silly to point at a certain point.
Exponentially off the scale.
Yeah, so
you're absolutely right.
And here's the thing. Now is the time where you can go as deep into this as you want, Adi. There are no excuses. If you want to be environmentally responsible, I agree with you, Dad. It's about what you do, what you buy, how you consume, and get on the internet and do some research. Look into aquaponics. If you want to be sustainable, you can. You can grow your vegetables using fish and feed your fish using the vegetables, grow your own food and have excess. I mean, you can go as deep as you want. So if you want to get serious about it, there's never been a better time to be environmentally friendly than 2018. It's a fact. I'm talking to the guys on the cutting edge, man.
Dude, those are such good words. Those are such good words, Jordan. And here's the thing. We all want to be a part of the solution. And the solution is a big, giant, broad thing. The solution is a million front battle, right? What Missy and I do is we create companies that help people. Lifebook is a company that, well, you guys all know, you're in the Lifebook program. We're sharing the system that we use to create our extraordinary life and helping other people do the same thing. That's what we're doing with Lifebook. With Purity Coffee, our mission is to create the healthiest coffee in the world and to educate people on the benefits of coffee, the health benefits of coffee that are not widely known. We're doing something really, really good over there. We've just partnered with the American Cancer Research Institute. We're talking to the Diabetes Foundation. These are some of the conditions upon which coffee has a profound positive effect. And so there's another company that we are putting into the world that's doing good. We're launching Black Star next month. That is a company that is focused on helping people who develop addiction problems. Miss and I have very, very deep, painful personal stories with addiction, having lost three younger brothers to drugs and alcohol. And so we're pushing our chips in there too. So we have these things that we're focused on that are part of the solution. And at the same time, we want to be environmentally, it's not our, you know, the environment and climate change and all that. That's not our particular issue that we're going to go deep in and really learn and understand and sort of drive. But we want to do our part to be responsible across the board on those matters.
No, you're right. Here's the thing. Everyone wants to be part of the solution. Adit clearly wants to be part of the solution. A lot of people don't want to be part of the problem. And that's what Adi is looking at here. She doesn't want to be, she doesn't want to be part of the problem. And that's a noble thought to begin with. Okay.
Absolutely.
They don't like what's going on with the planet right now, and they don't want to be part of the problem. So just do your research and don't beat yourself up. There's so much beating yourself up now because we've been hammering this subject for so long. Don't beat yourself up. Do your part, do what you can and go to sleep happy.
Yep. I like it. We'll leave it at that.
Good luck, Adit. Next question from Aura. Any advice on how to create a good quality of life as a single?
As a single? Well, I don't know a lot about being single, but I will say this. I assume that it's exactly the same except for the love category. I mean, all the same factors are still in play. You have an environment you want to make beautiful. You have experiences that you want to bring into your life that gives your life richness and depth. and beauty and adventure. You want to be physically healthy. You want to dial in all of the categories. You know, love is not in play, but everything else is, and I don't see where the differences would be necessarily. I mean, I think if you don't have a romantic partner to travel with, so you may have to rely on the social category a little bit more heavily for that connection. But don't you think that all the same principles are still in play, Jordan?
I think that Aura should be selfish. I think that as a single, you can go deeper on your health and fitness because you don't have to worry about the other person in the relationship. You have more hours in a day. So you need to be thinking in reverse logic here. If I'm locked in my ideal marriage, what am I not doing? And what can I focus on now? Be a little selfish in the quality of life category. Be a little selfish, you know, don't eat a bunch of ice cream, but I don't know. Take two hot baths instead of just one today, because there's no one. I don't got to cook dinner or go shop for the lady. I don't got to do any of this stuff. So why not treat myself? So I'd be selfish as much as you can, or while still, of course, being healthy and functional and pushing your life forward.
I like it. That's good.
Next question from Megan. I was originally drawn to the Lifebook program when I heard you talk about traveling 5 months out of the year with your family. I have a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old daughter, and our goal as a family is to travel. At what age do you think it's worth starting for kids? Some people say they want to wait until they can remember, for instance. Other people say do it now. It'll help shape them. And what would be some top places you'd recommend with traveling with the kids? Great question, Megan.
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess that the best way for me to frame this up is that Missy and I never really considered where to go with our kids. We decided where we wanted to go, and we took our kids. That's a big, big difference. Mm-hmm. We were just living our life. We wanted to see the entire world. Yeah, the very first 5-month trip we took was to Southeast Asia. It was from Vietnam all the way down through the Indonesian islands.
But you guys are warriors. Like, that's great, and it's a great story. Right. But for Megan, you guys are warriors. Maybe Megan's not a 100% warrior, and she wants to know, since you've been around, you know, what do you recommend for her?
Well, here's what I am saying. We didn't start traveling for them. We started for us, and we wanted them to have that experience. The sooner the better. If you've got this bug, if you've got the travel bug, and specifically if you've got the travel bug and want to do the family thing like we did, the sooner the better. We've lived on 4 continents with our youngest kids. Mm-hmm. Our favorite part of the world as a family is Asia. The kids tend to like the northern countries, the first world countries, Japan and Korea and China. We tend to like the third world countries in the south a little bit more, the Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia. But we all love them all. We just simply don't make a distinction between the good places for kids and the good places for us. We go where we want. They come with us, and they have an amazingly rich life experience. Jade took her first international trip when she was 6 months old, and it was a 16-hour flight to Australia.
Jesus.
So, I mean, we are just all in and just, you know, do exactly what we want to do. And those kids have had such an amazing, I mean, Jordan, they've been to the bazaars of Cairo and the Valley of the Kings, and they've been to 50 countries, those two. And you know, like our 14-year-old, he's been to 50 countries.
Jesus.
And so he's a citizen of the earth. He knows how the world works. And you know, they don't have the standard education that most American kids have. So Justin probably couldn't recite some of the things that other kids in schools, American schools, can recite, but he has a vast amount of personal experience in his head based on how we've raised him. He understands other cultures. He understands other religions. He understands other cuisine, right? So it's not for everyone, and we never preach our stuff as universal truth, but it sure has been amazing for us. And now we know other couples that have done it as a result of, you know, us sort of breaking through. And by the way, I got to give Tim Ferriss credit for this, because Tim's book, so Miss and I have always traveled for like a month. Mm-hmm. That used to be our winter. We'd get out of Chicago for a month and we'd go to Hawaii or we'd go somewhere. But when we read Tim's book in, I think it was 2007, I was like, That's what inspired us to take that first 5-month trip. And once we took that first 5-month trip, it was so friggin' amazing that we said, this is it. We're going to live this way now.
Wow.
Miss and I had dinner with Tim Ferriss last week and told him that he was a real inspiration to us when it came to that. And then we've been a real inspiration to other people. You know, Tim doesn't have kids, and we took it to the next level doing it as a family. And now we've got other couples like Garrett and Carrie Gunderson, and, you know, some of our best friends, Pat and Laura Gintempo, are doing it too. And it's so awesome to see it's possible for you to do this. And that's what most people just don't understand. If you have a job that you can do from anywhere, and probably half the population does now, you know, but, you know, if you have to be physically at your job, then what you need to do is figure out a way if you can put together a couple months.
Right.
But if you have a job that you can run anywhere there's internet, you know, then
oh, man.
You can do this.
Yeah, you'd be a fool not to take advantage of it at least once. So let me warp the question this way.
Hold on, let me just...
Sorry, go ahead.
Can you hold that thought and let me say what you just said? You'd be a fool not to do it at least once. Here's why that's such good advice. Because we would have never guessed. We didn't know on the front end. We'd never planned for this to be a lifestyle. We
right.
did it once. And after we did it once, we said,
changed your life.
We're never going to stop doing this. The second year, we moved to Indonesia. We lived in Indonesia for 6 months. We put our kids in a bamboo school in the middle of the jungles of Ubud. And it was the most amazing experience ever. And then from there, we just never stopped. It was Egypt, South Africa, you know, Nicaragua, all over the world. And it has been... So one of the very, very best things about our life, hands down.
So let's just wrap it up with this really quickly. If I were to rephrase the question and say, which countries have you gone to that have impacted the kids the most, the ones where you see the kids are the happiest, the ones where you think they get the most kick out of it? I mean, there's a reason you went to Hawaii time and time again. It's because kids love Hawaii. But maybe this the look of wonderment in their eyes at the bottoms of the pyramids beat that out. I don't know. What do you think was the most impactful?
The Middle East was hard. The Middle East was hard for a couple reasons, a couple cultural reasons. Plus, that was the year of Arab Spring, and everybody was just like,
well, there you go.
Agitated.
That's the kind of thing that you don't really expect.
But the Middle East is tough. You know,
right?
It's just tough.
Where do they light up? Where do they light up the most?
Where they light up is anywhere there is a beach. The Philippines have the most beautiful beaches in the world. Thailand has the most amazing culture. The temples of Southeast Asia, whether Cambodia or Thailand or Indonesia, you want to see wonderment in their eyes? We were in Laos. There's a temple called the Temple of 1,000 Steps. You climb up and you get to the top, and I mean, that's wonderment. You take a little bird in a little cage from the bottom, and you go up there to the temple, and you let the bird go.
Wow,
it's beautiful. And our kids have experienced the great festivals like the Nipi Festival in Bali and the Bunam Tak Festival in Cambodia, where they release all those paper lanterns. Jordan, have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands of paper lanterns going into the sky. They also float these beautiful little shrines, burning shrines down the river. It's just extraordinarily beautiful. And so anywhere there's natural beauty, Machu Picchu. You know, we've never taken our little kids to Machu Picchu. Jesse's been. Have you been, Jordan?
Yeah, I was on that trip, and I'll never
Igor
forget it. Yeah, it's very, very fascinating. South America. Don't sleep on South America.
Yeah, South America has some. You know, South America's hit and miss. There's some dangerous countries down there in Central and South America. You know, Honduras has the highest murder rate in the world by a mile. Brazil has its places that are you know, okay, and its places that are not okay. So you got to be a little bit careful down there. But the natural beauty is incredible. Iguazu Falls, Peru. I mean, but what I would say is we focus on the natural wonders. And then the other thing that we focus on are the great monuments of the world. We lived in Paris for a few weeks under the twinkling lights of the Eiffel Tower. That was magical. Rome, you know, we like to take our kids to experience history and to experience nature. But we're going there for us too. I mean, it's like, we don't really make a distinction between what's good for the kids and what's good for us. We just travel as a
family. There is no distinction. You're right. Just get out there and you're going to love it. You're going to love it, Megan. Good luck to you. Next question from Frank. What are some of your favorite ways to spend your free time? What activities bring you a real sense of joy and disconnect from your stress and your work? And how do you make sure to prioritize these activities? This is what I was talking about, where creativity lies, though, because for you, if I had to put my money down, are you going to say painting?
Well, first thing I'm going to say is what free time?
Totally.
This year has been a really, really hard push. And this is one of the things that I think we all have to understand about all these categories. Depending on where you are in your life, you may have to push very, very hard in one or two areas.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes at the temporary expense of other areas.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes it's time to really focus on your teenagers and do a big, hard parenting push at the expense of spending so much time at work. But other times you've got a big, huge career project that needs to be done for the good of your family, and it's time to push through that and you know, at the expense sometimes, temporary, and this is the beautiful thing about the Lifebook system, you never let yourself get too far behind, but sometimes sacrifices have to be made. This year, Missy and I have been pushing to get all of our companies ready for us to move to Hawaii next month. After almost 30 years in Chicago, Thanksgiving week, we are moving to the islands. And so this year, I have had almost no free time. What I've done this year with the free time that I do have, date time with Missy and my time with the kids is pretty much all I've had time for lately.
Right.
And I don't miss it. I won't miss it. I can't function if I don't have a deep connection with my wife and my kids. It's just super important to me. Now, once we get to the islands, literally our entire lifestyle is going to change. Our whole...
You're going to get the bends.
Let's hope so. I'm ready. But leisure time is absolutely what we're after. And so let me tell you how I've spent my leisure time in the past and how I intend to spend it in the future. I love any time I can get in nature, Jordan. Any time I can get in nature. Walks around my garden. When we get to Molokai, it'll be walking around. You know, it's just spending time in nature is so important to me. I love learning history. If it were up to me, I'd spend at least an hour every day walking around with my iPod and listening to a history show. At least an hour. and you're right, painting, doing art is way, way up there. In addition to spending time with Miss and the kids and, you know, working on my environment, I love all those things. I don't tend to prioritize my leisure time. I tend to let that be very free-flowing. My life is friggin' prioritized. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That belongs in my business life and sort of on the goal achievement, goal accomplishment side of my life. When I have open space and leisure time, I just let it go.
I like that. That's a good point, because some people aren't like that. Some people are like, oh, I got leisure time. I'm headed down to the track, or headed up to the mountain to see if I can beat my snowboarding record. You know what I mean? It's like, that's a really good point. The point of your free time is free time. That's what I'm saying.
My free time tends to be when it's not spent with Miss and the kids or on a specific project. It tends to be very contemplative. There's a great quote by, I believe, Henry David Thoreau said this: only through leisure time can one contemplate the soul's estate.
That's great.
when you have leisure time, you can really look inward. And that's what I'm very, very excited about, stepping into this new life with Missy, where we have more leisure time to be contemplative. And I think that we're going to do our very best work from that sort of philosophical, more leisurely place.
Love it. Final question coming from Joanna. What is the best advice you can give us on how to have a balance between quality of life, vision, and the now? What we need to do each day to build that future? Thank you. I'm blessed to have you in my life. Thanks for that little note, Joanna.
Yeah. Thanks, Joanna. Well, you know, that's a great, great question. And I talk about this in our mastery course, which used to be called our VIP boot camp. The big secret is it's not just the having of your life vision that should make you happy eventually someday, but it's the building of it that should make you happy as well. It's not just about that final destination that you intend to reach.
Yes.
It's about the journey to get there, because the only way that you can build your ideal life is step by step. So you're going to be spending a lot more time on the journey than you are at the ultimate destination. So yeah. That journey has got to produce immense happiness. It's got to be a pleasurable, satisfying experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm producing a great friend of Lifebook, Dr. Joel Wade. I'm producing his podcast called the Mastering Happiness Podcast. Anyone who's interested in being happier should check that out today. Go subscribe. He has a really interesting episode. It's called, it's the most recent one at the time of this recording. It's called Visualizing the Journey and the Destination. And he said something which I hadn't heard in personal development before, which was he was talking about visualizing and how, you know, visualizing is a great tool and a lot of people use it, but there's a pitfall in visualizing having already succeeded. He said that it ticks part of your brain that makes you think you already got there. And that it puts a certain mindset on you that's like, well, why I kind of just experienced it, and it lowers your motivation for some people. I thought it was very interesting how he said you have to visualize yourself building it to the success. Don't just visualize yourself at the finish line, right? And I thought that's what athletes do. They don't just visualize themselves winning, right? The boxers, they're throwing their punches. They're competing in the game, and then you're at the finish line, right? So it was an interesting thought, and clearly he would expand on it, you know, more articulate than I just did, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I love it. I think that really does deserve some consideration. So I know exactly what my life vision is, and I'm super excited about that. I can visualize that. I can see it. I review it every day.
Your vision board.
But my strategy to get there, I'm going to make sure that I'm smelling the roses along the way. I'm going to make sure that I'm watching the sunsets. I'm going to make sure that I'm looking at the stars every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. And visualize yourself being challenged. Visualize yourself hitting those hurdles.
Yeah, exactly. I love that, Jordan. So yeah, that's the balance. Again, you know, the progressive accomplishment of worthy goals is what gives us self-esteem. It's what gives us quality of life. It, you know, a goal achievement, goal accomplishment, we can't have a 12-category smart life without those things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just about charging to those goals every second of the day. Life is meant to be lived. Life is meant to be enjoyed, and we've got to make sure to have a balance between the two.
I love it. And if you want a specific strategy, Joanna, meditate on it. Meditate on it. Use your own divining rod. The answer will become clear. Awesome, man. Wow. Powerful list of questions.
Those were fun.
Yeah. Great stuff. So how what's going on with you? Catch us up. What's happening before we sign off here? What's going on in your world?
Well, Missy and I are headed to Kuala Lumpur next week. We're going to spend a few days at Mind Valley. We're releasing Lifebook version 2.0 this December, 11 years in the making. It's just basically, if you can imagine the Lifebook program on steroids, that's what we're talking about here. It's a whole different level, and we'll be releasing that program, I believe, December 17th, starting in January. So it goes on sale December 17th, mm-hmm. and we're going to be beginning the program in January, and we're expecting thousands and thousands of people to go through.
That's really great.
With Missy and me on that. So we're going to Mind Valley to do a little bit of work on that, and then we head from Kuala Lumpur to Bali for Mind Valley's A-Fest. We're featured speakers there, and looking forward to hanging out with all the awesome people that go to A-Fest. That crowd is one of the best. Yeah, they're just one of the best groups of people ever on the planet. So then we come home and pack our shit 2 straight weeks, and then we head to the island. So it's like we're Jordan, we've been working for 18 months on this move.
Wow.
We're a couple weeks away now, and we've only got a few more events between now and then. And then we're literally going to step into a brand new life vision. You know, this process really does work. It really does work. If you get crystal clear on your vision, develop a plan to achieve it, take action on that plan every day, and pay attention to results as you go so you can adjust if necessary, you will end up where you intend to end up. This is the way it works. And we're so grateful to have this system in our lives and so happy to be able to share it with other people.
That's awesome. And that's why I love that extra little note from Joanna. You know, it's good to hear the positive feedback every episode you create. So thank you guys for allowing us to help you. Let's see, what do we got here? Follow the Lifebook VIP Facebook page. Love reaching out to you guys there. Follow me on Instagram at Jordan River IG. Thanks so much. One more time, man. Thanks for doing this call. It's my favorite kind of podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jordan.
All right.
Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you next month.
See you next time on the Lifebook VIP podcast.